This week I'm coming to you guys with a bit of a special episode. This is somewhat of a reunion podcast with my old buddy, Dr. Mike Hart, who used to be on my first podcast, The Outlaws of Health Show, which some of you might know me from. I assume most of you have come since that time and maybe have never even heard of that podcast before. But this is a podcast we did in 2011, 2012 is when we started it, before everyone under the sun had a podcast. And we sat down and talked about men's health, particularly men's mindset and mental health. For men who struggle to take the necessary steps to take control of their health, even when it's something that they want to do more than anything else. So if you have friends, family members, significant others, people in your life, men in your life that you think can be helped from this podcast, I think we're going to do quite a few of these. I think we're going to do a series of men's health podcasts together. And today we just have a casual conversation about why it is that people in general, but men in that mix, struggle to make healthy choices, and what you can start to do to think differently in order to produce better results inside of yourself. So, if there's men in your life that you think can benefit from this, who want to take control of their health but are struggling to do so, maybe this is a way to get a foot in the door for that. So thank you everyone for listening to this episode. Let us know what you think. And like Mike mentions at the end of the podcast, we'll probably do a couple of these. So if there's things you want to hear about, things you want us to talk about, questions you want us to answer in terms of men's health, I'm struggling big time today in men's health, please let us know. And as always, enjoy the episode.
You're listening to the Heavy Brain Podcast, the podcast that addresses why we fail in our diet and exercise efforts. With a psychological twist, join host Tommy Caldwell as he breaks down the principles found in his best-selling book to help you take back your health and begin using your mind to control your waistline today.
Consuming, yeah. And like, look at my office. An awful background for it. We're going, so we can get started whenever you want. So maybe I'll give people a little bit of a background, because you and I used to do a podcast together called The Outlaws of Health, and that was like 7 or 8 years ago now. Something like that. 7 years ago?
Yeah, I think it was like 2011-ish, maybe 2012-ish. Like,
yeah, and it was actually you know, looking back at the stats, it was a pretty big podcast at the time. Like pretty much all of our episodes were number ones, and we were even in the top 30 of all North American podcasts of all genres, which is pretty big, especially for a health and fitness podcast. And also at the time, there was probably like 10,000 podcasts in that space, whereas now there's probably a million. So like everybody has a podcast now. So I don't know how those numbers equate to now, but yeah, so this is, you know, since then, I think this is the first time we've done something recorded.
Yeah.
Did you want to throw your gum out? I have a garbage can.
Sure. Let's do it. Let's
just do how it. You pull it out of your mouth, thinking about where you're going to stick it.
Tommy did do that. I wasn't really sure where to put my gum.
Instead of putting it in your pocket.
But yeah, so Tommy and I did podcasts back in 2011, 2012, The Outlaws of Health. That went really, really well.
This is Dr. Mike Hart, by the way.
Yeah, I should probably introduce myself. So my name is Dr. Mike Hart. I'm a family physician in London, Ontario. I've been practicing medicine for just over 5 years now. Have a lot of interest in cannabis medicine. Also have a lot of interest in general nutrition, health, biohacking, overall well-being, and you know, that's probably what we're going to talk about here today.
Yeah, so I thought we could talk about men's health because you're a man and you take care of yourself as well as help other men to some degree take care of themselves through lifestyle advice, some medical interventions and things like that. So I thought we'd start there. And it's also something that I don't talk about men's health too much specifically, because I find that men are a little bit more resistant to advice and a little bit more hesitant to ask for help. So a lot of what I do picks up way more traction with women, because women are just open to advice and change, and they're always looking for ways to, you know, to have interventions to make themselves healthier, where that can be a little bit more sensitive for men, where, you know, it's almost like they in order to ask for help and direction, there's an admission that you're less of a man than you should be, right? Which of course isn't true, but I see that. I see men perceiving health and fitness advice that way sometimes.
Yeah, that's the way I perceive it a lot too. I think that women are a lot more open to change or to new strategies to change their life, whereas, you know, men are kind of like set in their own ways. Maybe there's a little bit more of like an ego issue too. You know, they just don't want to admit that they have, you know, an issue going on. They don't want to admit that something's bothering them. They'd rather just kind of like sweep it like under the rug. You know, I always try and pay attention to like how people laugh. You know, like some people, like they'll laugh and laugh at something that's like genuinely funny. Like if you watched, you know, Dave Chappelle's Netflix, you know, that's genuinely hilarious. If you watch it, it's so funny.
Yeah.
But like, you know, you have a lot of guys that'll be like, oh yeah, I just didn't work out today, so I, you know, went and drank six beers, ha ha ha. And it's like, that's not really funny. Like what you're doing there is you're really just like suppressing something, and you're trying to just, you know, fix that with something that's very, very unhealthy. So I think that, you know, that's one thing that I try to pay attention to when I'm listening to others. But also it's, you know, something that maybe, you know, people should pay attention to when they're listening to others and also listening to themselves. You know, if you're finding that, like, you know, you're joking like about yourself, you know, all the time, and like these jokes are, you know, kind of like disses at your own self with regards like how you're, you know, taking care of yourself and taking care of your body, then, you know, maybe you should really, you know, look into those jokes. Or, you know, maybe those jokes aren't really something that you know, you should be joking about. Maybe something you should be taking a lot more seriously, and you should be, you know, implementing into your own life. So, you know, that's something that I have noticed, and something that I, you know, certainly pay attention to and have done so over the past few years.
Yeah, and it's, you see it all the time, and I think part of it is part of it's a bit of a mask, right? Like if it can be funny, then you don't have to take it as seriously. Right. If it can be laughed about, then it's less of a problematic mistake, and it's more of just like a funny thing that you can talk about. And I did a seminar this past weekend, and this is something that I brought up, is, you know, self-deprecating humor. There's a place for it, and self-deprecating humor can be a positive personality trait, right? Because especially if you're someone who is fairly successful and someone people look up to, it's good to have a sense of humor about yourself and not to take yourself that seriously. But what I said was, self-deprecation is only funny if you don't believe it, right?
Yeah.
If you're making fun of yourself, but it's, you don't actually believe the things you're saying, it's clearly a joke. But if you talk about yourself in a self-deprecating way, and deep inside it's what you believe to be true, that is a problem, and you're just reinforcing those terrible inner narratives that are so destructive for all people, right? Just the constant judging and placing every single thing you do that can be seen as a mistake or a misstep as a part of your personality. Like, it's your character, right? Which is a big problem when people look at every perceived failure as a character flaw. Not like you're a human being. When you try things, it's not going to go well 99% of the time, and you're going to screw up, and, you know, you just move on from those things. Where a lot of people, it's like, this is about me, right? And you see it in health all the time. I can't do this because something is wrong with me. When realistically, it's easier. Like, eating the pizza instead of the salad is the thing that makes sense, right? How people say no to pizza and eat salad instead. That's the thing that's weird, right?
Yeah.
Being healthy is the abnormal state for a modern human being when you're surrounded by all these things that you're driven to naturally consume. Like, it's normal to want to eat all of these, you know, high calorie, highly palatable manufactured foods that are designed to be hard to say no to.
And that's why too, you'll have so many people that will encourage you when you do, you know, have those jokes that you say out loud, because
right,
you know, you'll probably be surrounded by three or four other people who also make the same jokes all the time. So then you can kind of joke together and then you don't really think that it's a bad thing. Whereas, you know, you might be around someone and you might say that joke and they like might not laugh at all. And you're like, oh yeah, like that guy's an asshole. Like he thinks
I won't be spending too
shit.
Much time with him
and
anymore.
It's like, no, like that guy doesn't think he's a shit. He's not an asshole. He just like doesn't think that like you making fun of yourself is very funny. He thinks that it's kind of sad and that you should probably do something about it.
Yeah, and maybe that's the type of person you should be spending more time with, is someone who sees that as abnormal. Like, why would you want to say that about yourself?
Yeah,
I think having more people around you like that is probably better, but it's uncomfortable.
Yeah, right? And you have to get, you know, I know it's so cliche, but you do have to get used to being uncomfortable around those particular people, because if you don't, like, you're not going to be able to be around them. You're not, like, they're not going to want you around. And then second of all, you're just going to be left, like, you know, making all these self, you know, depreciating comments around other people who are only going to be encouraging that. Like, they're only going to be adding fuel to your fire. So, only going to be, like, making it worse. So, like, you know, obviously, if you, you know, start to hang out with someone who's, you know, not going to be laughing at those comments and it's going to be, you know, encouraging you to do better, it's going to be really, really uncomfortable at first. And they might even come across as, like, a dick. But you know what? Like, maybe you need someone who's a little bit of, like, a dick in your life for, like, a short period of time. But like on the same note too, like, just because, you know, you're not making these, like, you know, self-depreciating comments doesn't mean that, like, you have to be an asshole. Like, that's not like what we're saying, like, at all. You know, like, I don't make self-depreciating, you know, comments to myself, but I don't consider myself an asshole at all. So, you know, I don't want anyone to take that, like, the wrong way. You know, I know there's lots of people out there like David Goggins. You know, he's super, super hardcore. A lot of people, you know, look up to him for a lot of motivation, stuff like that. And I do too. You know, like, is he someone that you'd want to hang out with, like, all the time on, like, the weekends? Like, I don't know. Like, maybe he would be, maybe he wouldn't be. But, like, you know what? He might be fun as hell. We don't really know, you know? So I think it's good, like, you know, not to judge people either way, like, you know, no matter what sort of route they choose to take.
Yeah, and I mean, there's some people that, you know, that you have fun with, and then there's some people that build you up to be a better version of yourself. And some people are a little bit of both, but I think you have to, if you're constantly surrounding yourself with people who are happy to see you in the same place that you're at, right? And this is the circle that a lot of people run in, is they like being around people who allow them to stay the version of themselves that they don't want to be, right? Where, you know, when they start trying to do something differently, the people around them don't appreciate that.
Yeah.
Right? It's like, yeah. What do you mean you're not eating this? What do you mean you're not drinking in excess with us tonight? Whatever it might be, right? It's like, they don't like to see someone that they would consider a peer elevating themselves.
Also too, like, I think if they share that trait, like, that makes them feel good that four or five of their other buddies share this, like, really bad trait that
it normalizes.
Yeah,
right. You don't have to feel bad about it if all these other people around you that you consider to be good people are also all doing the same thing. And like, when one person in that group starts to do something differently in a more positive way, like, that's a very uncomfortable mirror to all those other people, because you see someone that you see as yourself doing this thing that you probably don't have the confidence in yourself to even start trying to do. And then you can't kid yourself anymore when it's like, someone who's just like me is doing something positive that I don't feel like I can do. It's easier just to pull that person back down. You'd be like, no. Where do you think you're going?
And some people even call you disloyal for that. They'll say that you're like a bad friend because, you know, like you're doing something that's different than what it was before. And maybe you're not in some ways like supporting, you know, their habits, but you're not supporting their poor habits. It's like that person's actually being good to you, right? And it's like, why would you be, you know, try to be loyal to someone else and then just be completely disloyal to yourself? You know, like what you'd want to do, you know, I would want, you know, someone to actually try to elevate me. You know, if I was doing something, you know, a really destructive bad habit, I wouldn't want someone to like normalize it for me so that I keep doing the habit. I'd want someone to point it out and say like, man, like you're doing this all wrong, like maybe you should be, you know, maybe you should try this approach, and then I'd get better. You know, like to me, like that sounds, you know, way more logical. It's going to improve my life so much more in the long term. Whereas, you know, a lot of people don't take that approach and they just normalize their friend's behavior, and they think that, oh, if I'm normalizing my friend's behavior, I'm being loyal to them, I'm being a good person. But it's like, no, you're keeping them in the exact same place, you know, just to make yourself feel good. You're not being a good person, you're not being a loyal friend. You know, yeah. You should try and elevate that person instead.
Yeah, it's very difficult and very complex, because when people, you know, there's a time and place for people to feel bad for themselves, right? Like there's mourning periods in all phases of life where you need to spend some time feeling sorry for yourself, but then you need to move on and move forward and improve. So many people are stuck in that constant mourning phase where all they want is people around them to tell them that you're fine, it's not your fault, like all these other factors are to blame, you're fine like the way you are and the way things are. And I think there's a time and place for that when things are, you know, when there's an acute pain where someone needs to get through it and they just need people to say like, I'm here, you're fine. But then, you know, there's a clear line that people cross over where they should be like, okay, it's time to get my shit together. And a lot of people don't ever pass that barrier. It's just, I just want to stay here and I'm only interested in being around people who tell me that this is okay. So it's hard for some friends to tell people the truth because they know that person is going to respond poorly.
Yeah.
They're not interested in hearing realistic advice, right?
And they respond to every single emotion. Like I heard once, you know, Jocko Willink talk about like, you know, like if something's like, you know, between like a 0 to a 7 out of 10, like you don't have to tell everybody. You don't have to have an emotional reaction to that. Like if something's really, really bad, like it's like an 8 to a 10 out of 10, like maybe you want to like chat with someone, you know, about that and let someone know. But like you have to exert like some like emotional control. And like, you know, if you're just like lashing out every time anything happens at all, then like that's just being like a child. Like you have no emotional control. You can't control anything. You know, your emotions are controlling you, and that's why you're behaving the way that you are. So, you know, I think that I'm not saying you need to like bottle things up. Like we said at the beginning of the podcast, that's not what we're, you know, trying to do here. But at the same time, you do need to understand that you have to exert some emotional control over, you know, things that are not that big of a deal. And then you reserve the things that are like a big deal, you know, for the times and for the people that, you know, will help you for those times. But I think that it's like a big mistake if you're just constantly getting, you know, emotional and reacting to like every single thing. Like you're going to have to get used to, you know, some things are going to bother you sometimes, and then, you know, those things maybe you will bottle them up a little bit. But again, it's just like the lower level things, like the everyday stuff. It's not like the big catastrophes that happen in life.
Yeah, and that's completely true, that it is the most childish thing to have inappropriate, overwhelming emotional outbursts, right? Whether it's in sadness or anger or fear or anything along that spectrum. A physician that we both know very well, Dr. Gabor Mate, who co-authored Hold On to Your Kids, that's what he says, and I find this to be very true. Like, let's say I'm someone who's sensitive to something like anger. every one of my uncontrolled emotional angry outbursts, like someone cuts me off in traffic and I'm like, you fucking idiot, like I'm raging in my car, that's me being childish because something along the way I wasn't able to express myself when I was angry, or when I expressed myself when I was angry, my parents dealt with it in an inappropriate way and suppressed it, whatever it might be. When we are in our most uncontrolled emotional states, that's usually something from our childhood playing out as adults that is completely unresolved. So when you talk about that, you know, the person on Facebook where every post of their life is about complaining about something, so people will come to their aid and tell them that, you know, it's not your fault and these terrible people, and like that is the epitome of childish. But I don't mean it like you're being a child. It's like, no, that's your inner unresolved childhood emotional issues coming out as an adult because they're completely unresolved and you're sensitive to them, and now you're playing them out in the most unhelpful way possible.
Yeah, I think you hit like the nail on the head with that. I think that there's so many adults today, you know, not just men, women too, that are very, very angry people because of like unresolved issues from their childhood. And like speaking on like the issue of anger, like it's okay to have anger. And like, you know, Tommy and I, you know, both, I think maybe myself a little bit more, follow stoicism, you know, quite a bit. And that's, you know, really about controlling your emotions, a lot about controlling anger. But at the same time, like they'll say, it's totally normal to feel angry. Like if someone cuts you off in traffic, like you don't really have any control over that initial response. You do have control over, you know, your second reaction, but that like initial response, like you're always going to be pissed off when that happens. And like, that's totally normal. Like to think that, you know, you're going to be a person one day where someone can like cuts you off in traffic and you're going to have like zero emotional, like
Deepak reaction. Chopra, like we're talking like yesterday.
That's not possible. Like it's not possible. So like, just accept that like anger is an emotion that you are going to feel sometimes. Like what you want to do is you just don't want to add any insult to what happened. So someone cut you off in traffic, you can't control that, and you can't control that initial, you know, 2 second anger response where like, you know, you want to hit the person back or whatever it is. You know, you just can't control that. What you can control is how you regulate your emotions after that. You know, you say like, okay, I can, you know, let this bother me for 20 seconds, or I can let this bother me for, you know, 10 minutes, or for some people it might days. Be all day or days. Yeah, exactly.
People will think about that person for days.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, that's the habit that you want to get out of. So, you know, I like stoicism isn't some like magical thing where like you're not going to have that initial reaction. You're never going to be angry. That's ridiculous. All it is you're basically just reducing that secondary anger period where, you know, if you use certain, you know, cognitive, you know, distancing techniques and things like that, where you can basically just try to allow yourself to let those emotions dissipate so you can concentrate and focus and get back to your work day or whatever you're doing. So, you know, that's really the whole like goal in my opinion of stoicism in a lot of ways. It's not to feel no anger, it's to feel less and to really try to control the second reaction, because the first reaction, you know, I've just accepted that I'm not going to ever be able to control that, and that's okay with me because that's part of life.
Yeah, it's the internal versus the external reaction, right? And but like my son's 3.5, I'm already trying to teach him this. Like, it's okay to be angry. It's okay to be upset. It's okay to be any of these things. But it's not okay to be angry and hit your sister in the face with a wooden spoon because you're angry, right?
Yeah.
There's a difference between feeling and then externalizing that feeling. And like you said, like, yeah, it's lower brain, primal brain. Like, there's a reason why things like anger and fear and sadness, like these are emotions that as social human beings we have to survive, right? If you can't feel sadness, you can't feel connection between the people around you. If you can't feel fear, you know, you're not going to survive on the savannah for one day if you're not able to be afraid of the unknown. And then things like anger is protective. If you're not capable of being angry, you're not going to be able to protect yourself and those around you during certain, you know, situations. So these are all completely natural emotions. It's just, is it an instantaneous thing that comes and then you just, it happens and then you let it pass? Or does it grab hold of you and then take over your mind and then push you to take certain actions that are clearly problematic and pathological? That's a different story. And I don't know if you've read Thinking Fast and Slow by Daniel Kahneman, but this is when he talks about system one versus system two thinking. You have your super effective, quick, emotional lower brain, which, you know, make sure you don't get hit by a car, right? Or eaten by something in the bushes. And then your system two is your more rational brain, where you can actually process things and think about what the right thing to do is, but it's slow and it's inefficient. And when I think about something like stoicism, it's along the same lines of, you just want to be quicker to recognize the reaction you're having, and then be quicker to understand if you're feeling and reaction to that is appropriate or not, because you're in control of that. You have the ability to train yourself to be in control of that. Like, oh, when I feel this, I can deal with it this way.
Yeah.
Rather than you deal with it when you've already done something really stupid, or it's 2 days later and you're still thinking about this person and you just try and let that run an unnatural course. Like, and you can train yourself to say, oh, this is not about this. This is not about the person that cut me off. Like, tell yourself a different story. That person just didn't see you. That person is 98 years old and can't see anything. Like, that person's having a shit day way worse than yours. Give them some slack. Like, you can choose to change that narrative. But we always pick our narrative and our story that comes first as the one that's true. And it's always the most negative one that any person could come up with. If you think about, like, what are the possibilities of how this thing happened in traffic? You're always going to think of the shittiest one yourself. And that's the one you're going to pick of the explanations. So for me, it's just like training myself to be open to considering different reasons why things happen around me, rather than just picking the most negative route for my own thoughts and emotions.
Yeah, I like how you said too a lot how, you know, when you have that reaction, like, you feel it at first and then you can kind of, you know, decide like what kind of story you tell yourself. And for a lot of people, like, as soon as they get, you know, angered, the first thing they do, they think is like, why am I so angry? Why is this happening to me? Why is my life like this? So, like, all those questions, those are all on you. You know, like, the person might have caught you off in traffic, but, like, they didn't ask you, you know, why am I so angry all the time? Why is my life like this? Why did this happen to me today? Like, that's what we're talking about with, like, the secondary reaction. And, like, if you feel anger, like, that's the thing, and that's what, you know, some people get confused, I think, about stoicism. They think that they shouldn't feel, like, any anger. It's like, no. It's like, okay, I feel some anger, so what am I going to do about it? Am I going to tell myself that, you know, this always happens to me, like, my life sucks? Or am I going to say, man, someone just cut me off in traffic. There's probably a million other people in the world who got cut off in traffic today. It's really not that big of a deal. You know, I'm going to be one of the million people that gets cut off in traffic and just goes about my day and has a good day. Whereas, you know, someone else might, you know, have this, you know, really, really poor narrative where they have this really negative self-talk. You know, anytime something bad happens, they have this, you know, emotional freak out that they add on top of it. And they just make everything worse, you know. So, you know, it's like that line where people say, you know, life is like 10% of what happens to you and 90% about what you do about it. I think I botched that, by the way, but something like that.
Paraphrasing clearly.
But you know, but that really does, you know, ring true in a lot of ways in a lot of situations. Like, if you really think about it, and you think about your own life, like, most of the time, that something bad happened, it was probably because you added, you know, something to it. You added injury to the insult yourself. And that's a thing that, you know, I think we all need to really get away from. And, you know, coming back to, like, you know, the men's health and all that, I mean, that's the story that they're telling themselves, you know, when they make these kind of like jokes about themselves, about their physique, or, you know, whatever it is, you know, it's like, oh, let's just have, you know, a dad's bod day or whatever it is that like people want to do. Like, you know, you're telling yourself that, you know, you deserve to have a dad's bod, and it's okay to have a dad's bod, and it's okay to make jokes with all your buddies about having your dad's bod and have a big old laugh about it. When in reality, you know, really you should be thinking about that, you know, like, how are these jokes really making me feel? Like, how are they making me feel in the long term? Like, am I just adding, you know, insult to injury? Like, I'm already overweight, already don't feel, you know, good about myself. Is, you know, making all these jokes about it, is that really going to change my behavior for the better in the long run? And the thing is it's probably not going to change your behavior. It's probably just going to reinforce your behavior, because as we've discussed, you're basically just normalizing it at that point.
Yeah, and I see, like, at this point in my life, I see a lot of this with people I know when it comes down to stuff like marriage and like joking about like never having sex with your wife, and how like you've been together this long and it's like this is just how things go and you never have sex anymore. It's like,
I hate that joke.
You might want to resolve that, because that can only lead to a negative place.
Yeah.
Like, not having that sort of connection. It's not like it has to happen this often in this way, but when you've just become okay with the person, the only person that I'm supposed to be having any sort of sexual interaction with, I'm okay with that just not being a thing that happens anymore. Like, what road does that lead down? But when you're with a bunch of other buddies and everyone's joking about how no one has sex with their wives anymore, it's like, that's not going to end well for it's your not. Marriage. Like, that's something where maybe you should think about, well, what can be done about this? Because that relationship and that connection is only going to get more difficult to reestablish when it goes further and further and further into the wrong direction. And that's just an example.
It's gonna get bitter on both sides.
For
like,
sure.
Like, if, you know, like, and again, like, I'm speaking as a non-married person, but, you know, like, if someone is unable to, if you're not having sex with the person that you're married to, you're gonna just become bitter towards that person. You know, it's because when people think of their, you know, ideal, in some ways, or what they want in a marriage. I mean, obviously, you know, for most people, you know, they want a healthy sexual relationship, you know, where they feel satisfied. And that's a very, very basic, you know, human need. Like, we're not being crass at all. Everyone, you know, needs to have, you know, sex in their life. It makes them feel good. So, you know, whether you're a man or a woman. So I think that, you know, by not having those discussions, it's one of those things where just like suppressing it. And then like what people do is, you know, when they find that, you know, something is negative in their life, it makes them feel so much better when they can find other people who are also struggling with the same issue. So instead of trying to like fix the issue of, you know, maybe having more sex with your wife, with your girlfriend or whoever it is, you know, instead of actually trying to fix that issue, what they do is they try to normalize it by seeking out other people who also have the same issue. And then when they find those other people, then that just normalizes, and then they feel okay about themselves and they feel like they don't have to fix that issue anymore. And then it just gets worse and worse and worse.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's the thing that I think that, you know, a lot of people will run into with that issue is, you know, and that's the two reason why people like, they seek out celebrities like online who are like struggling, because they just want to know that like someone else out there has the same issue that they do, and that if they know that, that's going to make, you know, their whole world better. But really, that's just going to give you a small amount of instant gratification, and it's doing nothing for your problem. It's only making it worse and reinforcing it in the long term. So I think that, you know, a lot of people kind of need to, you know, distance themselves when they, you know, make those jokes, and actually think about what they're joking about and what the long-term consequences will be.
Yeah, I mean, I get that it's hard to say, you know, to go and talk to your wife and say, like, what do you think of this? Like, this is a problem. What are we going to do about this? Do we need to see somebody? Like, do we... It, maybe the conversation is enough to fix it. But, you know, human beings naturally move away from discomfort, move toward comfort, and it can be comforting just to go, oh, I found 10 other people who have the same problem and seem to be pretty relaxed about it. So I can just be okay where I am and not have to worry about fixing it. So understanding this, right, understanding how massive the mental game is in taking care of yourself, you know, physically, psychologically, emotionally, spiritually, however you want to, you know, whatever you want to throw into the mix. How do you operate as a physician working with men, understanding, you know, that this is such a core part of anyone making meaningful change? Like, is there even a way as a family physician to mix that into your job? Because, you know, you're under this incredible pressure to spend very little time with people. You know, the way things are designed, it's not designed to have a lot of sit down, meaningful conversations where you can get to know your patients, even to a place where they're comfortable having those conversations. And then, like we were talking about earlier, like, men are difficult. They're going to be resistant to that conversation with their closest friends, let alone a physician that they don't have maybe that personal connection with. So understanding, you know, how much something like a philosophy of stoicism and, you know, controlling emotions and making sure that your emotions at least aren't harming the things you're trying to accomplish in your life. How can you, and if so, how can you help translate that necessity onto men who come to you for help?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I'm glad you asked it for a lot of different reasons. So, you know, first of all, like, you know, I see my practice some ways in two ways. So, you know, I see patients obviously in person in my practice, but also too, you know, I always say that my social media accounts are really for my patients. So, you know, I try to educate my patients with things that, you know, I can't do in the 15 minutes that I have with them online. And that's really, you know, and I know it's not the, you know, maybe the best solution, but it's the best solution that I can think of right now anyway, you know, because I don't really see any other way to, you know, have, you know, really long discussions with my patients, because, you know, there's just simply not enough time, unfortunately. So, but on that note too, you know, there was something I've been, you know, thinking about, you know, lately a lot. And, it was, again, something that, I forget the exact quote, but it was basically saying something that, like, you know, it's really, really difficult for you to change anybody at all. You can only make them think. I think it was Socrates that said it. And 'cause I always was really, like, confused about, sometimes, you know, you see parents who are, like, in really, really good shape, they're really fit, they're doing well, and then, like, you know, their kids are sort of, you know, overweight, and they're not doing so well. And, you know, I've thought about that, you know, quite a bit, and I always thought that it was, you know, the parents' kind of fault in some ways. But, you know, I kind of see now that it really just comes down to each individual. And, like, to, and what I'm trying to get at here is that, like, you need to make that change yourself. So, you know, your parents aren't going to make the change. You know, your doctors aren't going to make the change. You know, other people around you aren't going to make that change for you. You're going to have to make that change yourself. It's going to have to come from within. So, you know, knowing that, you know, I do my best to, you know, guide my patients, you know, when I see them in person, and then I do my best to, you know, guide patients, you know, online through, you know, various different posts and, you know, doing podcasts and things like this. But ultimately, you know, at the end of the day, you know, I know that, you know, the difference that I'm making is very, very little. You know, I can really just maybe spark someone's brain to maybe think a little bit differently, but I certainly can't, you know, change their behavior and change their actions. And I think that, you know, that's something that, again, that just has to, you know, come from within. So, you know, the main message here I'm getting to is, like, no one, you've probably heard before, but, like, no one is going to come save you. You just have to try to, you know, learn from, you know, the people that you resonate with the best, the people who put out, you know, the best information with the most evidence, and then to just try to apply that to your life. But, like, no one's actually gonna come try and, like save you. And unfortunately, like, you know, I I can't like save my patients. I mean, some of my patients who, you know, may have said that, like, you know, I've saved them, but like it wasn't me who did it. You know, I just provided the medicine and provided some of the guidance, and then they're the ones who actually did it. So I think that, you know, that's sort of the message that I want to, you know, a lot of my patients to hear today is that, you know, the change does have to come from within, and you can only get so much help and motivation from outside sources.
Yeah, I think it's something that's been really important for me to learn is along the same lines, people have to make that decision themselves. Absolutely. And they have to take those steps, and there's no one who can do anything for them as far as making critical and crucial changes in their lives. But at the same time, the environment that you can provide for them, even if they're resistant to it, the more exposure someone can have to a positive environment, the more likely they are to change. And I think about this with like smoking and quitting smoking, right? Like, anyone who tries to quit smoking 100 times is going to quit smoking, right? Like, if you try over and over and over and over and over and you don't quit on the quitting, you're going to quit smoking. And my mom's a smoker, and I think of that because, you know, she'd try and quit smoking, and then 2 weeks later I'd catch her smoking a cigarette and I'd have something to say about it. Right? Like some snarky remark about how she was, you know, going to quit, and now I see her smoking. But now, you know, as somewhat more of an adult, I look at that and think, like, that's the worst mistake I could make, is make my mother feel bad about trying, because I want her to try and try and try and try, because eventually it's going to work for her. And then even, you know, influencing other family members with like the foods they eat or the exercises they do. Like, it took years of me just setting my own example for them to come around to the idea that these are maybe things that they should do for themselves. Because a lot of people, especially when it comes from someone that you're close to, you don't want to take that person's advice. Right? When it's like a family member or a loved one, it's like you don't want to give them that they're the reason why you've like made this change and done something differently. They want to feel like they've come along that change independent of you. So it's like, I don't expect anyone to change on my timeline anymore. And I don't get like, I'll have friends who are like, I'm coming to the gym. And I'm like, yeah, okay. This is what, the 15th time you've said that to me? You've come 3 times, and then you show up twice, and then I see you a year from now. Like, I try not to carry that attitude anymore. It's more like, yes, come to the gym. And if it's the 15th time that you come for 3 days and then don't come again for another year, come again next year and let's see how that goes, right? Yeah. Just get, like, everyone has to change themselves, but I think we can do a good job of giving people an environment where their failures aren't judged, and you just keep setting the example in a way that's not authoritative. Yeah. Of like, this is what I do and this is what you have to do. And if you can't, like, this is why I have somewhat of an issue. Like, I read David Goggins' book. It's incredible. Like, I like guys like Jocko Willink, but I also don't like the attitude of, if you can't do this, you're just a little bitch.
Yeah.
I think for a lot of people, that is immediately defeating, that sort of attitude, rather than like,
and then they won't listen to you after that either.
Exactly,
right? Because they just think, like, you're a big bully.
It might take you 100 attempts to do this thing, and the 99 failures before the success, it's not like you're a little bitch. Yeah. In each one of those attempts. Yeah. Right? It's like, it's not about that. It's just, you're not there. The thing that you need at that time, the stars haven't aligned in a way that works for you. Yeah. And I just try and be more understanding of that stuff, of like, it's up to me to create the environment where people are allowed to mess up as often as they like and still feel comfortable coming back and trying again. Because eventually the breakthrough is going to happen.
Yeah.
And that's up to the person, and that's up to a lot of stuff that I think is out of everyone's control, right? It's like success with people when they talk about, you know, the element of luck, like the element of luck is always there, But it is. When people keep trying eventually that try with the luck is going to line up and they're going to break through. But most people never get there because they're so like beat up and destroyed by the feelings of failure from the attempts that they don't get to that breakthrough point. So I just try not to be the barrier anymore to people's trying again, because it's just all about how many of those little bullets can you fire till one breaks through.
Yeah. And sometimes too, like with each breakthrough, you know, you might discover something new. So, you know, maybe the first time you try and quit smoking, you know, you try vaping and maybe it doesn't really work that well, but maybe the second time, you know, you try the gum and maybe, you know, the gum works a little bit. So, you know, that the third time, you know, you can use the gum and then, you know, that'll be a little bit better than the vaping or whatever it is, you know, and then the fourth time, maybe you add in, you know, something, you know, over the counter. Some people say St. John's Wort helps with, you know, decreasing smoking cessation, or, you know, maybe even get a prescription pharmaceutical from someone, you know, or from a doctor, maybe not from someone. but you know, each time, like you're learning new strategies, and then maybe it will take you, you know, you have to learn, you know, a new strategy every single time. And then, you know, on that 10th time, finally, when you add up all those new strategies that you learn from every single time from the previous 9 times, it works.
Yeah.
You know, so sometimes like the process just takes like a little bit longer than we expect. And, you know, coming back to like your understanding comment, it's like most people are generally like understanding of children, right? Like if a child is like, you know, misbehaving and they're, you know, acting inappropriately, like we kind of understand that. Like, okay, like they're just a little kid. I was probably a little shit when I was 6 years old too. So, you know, I'm not gonna judge them, I'm not gonna get mad at them. You know, yeah. They're just a little kid, right? So like, you know, luckily in my life, you know, in Tommy's life, like we were exposed to, you know, athletics and the gym at like a really, really young age. Like I started working out with weights when I was 14, and like I got into it really heavy, like right away. Like I've never ever stopped since. Like, you know, it's been over like 20 years now. So, you know, I was exposed to that very, very early. So I understand that I had that opportunity. You know, other people, you know, weren't exposed to that. They don't have that opportunity. So, you know, I have to understand the people who have never been inside a gym, who, you know, don't like to take care of themselves. I have to have some understanding about that. And again, I'm not calling those people a child. I'm just saying that I'm just using the example of the child, because we understand the child because they're not exposed to that. They haven't learned anything about that. So because they haven't learned anything about it, they can't apply it to their life. So it's the same thing with an adult. They're just an adult who hasn't been exposed to all this stuff before. So, you know, instead of like getting like mad at them, you know, you should have some type of empathy for them and just kind of think, well, you know what, this person, you know, wasn't exposed to this stuff, you know, so they're not going to be into it as much as I am. It's not going to be consistently part of their routine. I'm going to understand this person. I'm not going to, you know, berate them, but I'm certainly going to encourage them to try to change their behavior. And then, you know, like we talked about, like, yeah, I like Goggins and Willink and those guys, but at the same time too, you don't want to be a bully. And I'm not saying those guys are bullies in any way, shape or form, but you know, you don't want to come across as a bully, because no one's going to listen to you if you're just being a bully. And you know, I think that some people have kind of like run into that in their careers. You know, maybe I won't say anyone online right now, but I might have a couple of people that I could name afterwards. But you know, I think that can get you into trouble. And I think that the way to get past that is to just try to be more understanding and look at them more as, you know, a grown adult who, you know, didn't have the opportunities that you had.
Yeah. And also having that same sort of empathy for yourself too.
Yeah.
Not as an excuse, right? Not using empathy and feeling sorry for yourself, but understanding like, when I want to do something and I want to change something, and then I struggle to do that and my habits and behaviors don't align with my goal, it's not because like I'm a weak loser. It's because like these are not easy things to do. and I'm gonna, and it's normal to fall on my face 50 times, and it's just about going back to doing the best I can in this area that I'm trying to improve. But most of us, the feeling of failure is so strong, and we're so brutal to ourselves when we have those slip ups that it's better just to not try, because it's so painful to have to face yourself, you know, and you talk to yourself in the worst way. And if you just stop doing that and give yourself some slack while, you know, trying and while making attempts, but when things don't go perfectly, understand that that's just how it goes. And it's just about, well, now I'm just going to try and do better again tomorrow. Like, you have to give yourself that sort of leeway if you're ever going to succeed. If every time you, you know, if you're trying to change your diet and then you eat a pizza on Saturday and you're calling yourself a fat fucking loser on Sunday, why would you ever try to change if that's the version of yourself that you have to deal with every time you make a mistake? Changing that inner voice and that inner narrative is huge. But you have a couple minutes until you have a kickboxing and perhaps wrestling and jiu-jitsu session coming up. So if there's men listening right now who are in that boat where they're constantly defeated and self-defeated and don't know really where to start and how to change, what's your single biggest piece of advice, resource? Where would you have someone start who just wants to be resilient enough to stay in the game long enough to make the long-term changes that they want more than anything else?
Yeah, it's really just about, you know, a little bit of a resilient attitude. And like, it's not like this, like, don't make it so like black or white. Like, it's not like if you're not making this, you know, incredible amount of progress every single day that like you're doing nothing. Or like you said, like, you know, if you ate perfectly for 5 days and then you screwed up one day, like that's so much better than like eating like shit for 6 days. So like, give yourself a pat on the back. And the same thing too, if it goes with like intermittent fasting, like some people be like, oh, I didn't get my 16 hours. It's like, yeah, but man, you got like 14. And like the day before you got 6. So like, you know, like you did awesome, you know? Yeah. So like, it's okay if you can't like implement something that like you want to implement like right away. Like sometimes it takes time, you know, like when I started doing the keto diet and that, like it took me some time to cut out like every single carb. Like it wasn't just like overnight, you know, like I still was having some berries sometimes here and there after workouts, and you know, maybe you can have them if you are doing, you know, a really, really high cardiovascular workout and stuff like that, and we can maybe chat about that another time. But the point being is, like, you know, it took me some time to decrease all of these things to get to like the full diet. It wasn't just like you know, one day I just snapped my fingers and did it. It was a bit of a progress. And we should, you know, treat all the things that we're trying to improve on like that. Like, there's always going to be setbacks, and that's normal. And, you know, you shouldn't, you know, be discouraged or say anything negative to yourself because of that happens. You know, encourage the positive things that you have done. And then when you slip up, just recognize it and move on.
Yeah, I was listening to, actually on the way into work today, I was listening to a podcast. And the guy on it, he was saying, like, you know, people are trying to do things like follow a ketogenic diet when they should start with just don't eat candy for breakfast.
Yeah, exactly.
That's maybe step one. Like, do the thing that is the easiest and also high impact. But most people are just like, they're all in or they're not in at all. And it's this, you know, it's this problem of like, I want this and I want it now and I want these results by this time, which means like I have to do this thing right now. It's like, why don't you start with not eating candy for breakfast? I liked it. Anyhow, I wish we had more time, but, you know, being busy people.
But if you guys found this podcast interesting, please let us know. Ask us some questions. You know, you can find me online at Dr. Mike Hart. I'm on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn. You know, I'd love to hear your feedback. I'd love to hear some questions that you guys, you know, want us to answer. And, you know, Tommy and I'd be happy to do this again. So, you know, thank you so much, everyone, for listening and supporting this podcast. And, you know, we hope that we can put out some more information for you guys soon.
Yeah, and now Mike can go get beat up for a little bit.
Thank you for listening.
Be sure to subscribe and get all future episodes directly on your preferred electronic devices.